The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
Good morning. Welcome to Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We're located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania, but this morning, thanks to the internet and Zoom and our wonderful tech team, we're also as close as your home. We're a Unitarian Universalist congregation dedicated to nurturing the spirit and building a beloved community who share Tom Paine's idea that we have it in our power to begin the world over again. I'm Preston Lutwiler, President of the Board of Trustees, and I want to personally welcome you this morning. Wherever you are on your life journey, wherever you are on your spiritual journey, whomever you love, whatever your gender identity or expression, we welcome you into our expanding circle of compassion and caring. If you're visiting us today, you'll notice in the Zoom, if you're on Zoom, on the chat, a link to our virtual visitor card. This is a way for us to connect with you and you with us. So please fill it out at any time during the service. Our sermon today, by Reverend Aidson Wright Riggins III, is about hatred as a hound of hell, a reference to writings of Howard Thurman in his 1949 work, Jesus and the Disinherited. Raised by his formerly enslaved grandmother, Howard Thurman was a black 20th century prophet mystic who offered an emancipatory way of moving forward for people with their backs against the wall in the face of fear, hypocrisy, and hatred. Howard Thurman was the pastor of the first intentionally interracial congregation in the United States, the Church for the Fellowship of All People in San Francisco. So we'll begin with a chalice lighting, and I will read the words and then light the chalice. These are words from the Greenville UU Fellowship. Here we are together in this space. By our love and by our covenant, we make this a holy place. We light the chalice of Unitarian Universalism in honor of the light that lives in each of us, the light that shines among us, and the light we bring into the world. Never does hate cease by hating in return. Only through love can hatred come to an end. And now Linda will light the peace lamp.
Yes,
as I say the words, and the words will appear on your screen, your response will appear on the screen. May peace be with us and with all the people of the world. Our gathering song today will be hymn number 121, We'll Build a Land. This version is performed by the Unitarian Society of Santa Barbara, and the words will appear in the video.
We'll build a land where we bind up the broken,
And to introduce the theme of our service today, Hatred is a Hound of Hell, we're going to start with a short video, a moment for all ages, a video called I Talk to Kids About Hate. So we'll look at how kids perceive hate.
So that's kind of like what hate looks like for her. What's up, folks? Hate is a powerful, complex emotion that all of us feel, and most of us, including me, do not know how to deal with. We are out here today to see if kids have any advice on how to deal with hate. Let's do it. Do you feel like there's a lot of hate in the world?
Yes.
Why do you think that is?
Because you have to take a deep breath and say sorry, maybe.
Do you think that'll fix things?
Yep. And hugging.
Have you ever felt hate before?
Yeah. I really hate college, and I also have an allergy, and I'm also allergic.
Wait, you really hate what?
The ill in cars. If I stay in a car too long, I actually get car sick because I'm allergic and I also have an allergy.
You have an allergy to car air?
Yeah.
That's hard.
Yeah.
So how?
That's why my family always take short car rides.
That's very respectful of them that they do that.
Put a piece of gum in my mouth and then my grown-ups give me a mask.
Do you know what hate is?
Bad, bad, bad word.
Have you ever felt that feeling before?
Kind of.
Well, then how do you get past that?
Just take a deep breath.
Do you feel better? Oh, I like that. That was a nice little touch.
It's through nap time, so I'm going to have to get them home soon.
So, my friend, we're talking today about big, intense feelings, specifically the feeling of hate. What does that word mean to you?
Like you want to fight it. Like I always wanted to fight COVID.
Do you hate COVID?
If COVID was a person, I would punch in its face.
I think it's called like a suplex, where you like jump and you land with your elbow on someone.
Like Dwayne Johnson, the people's elbow.
Yeah, the people's elbow.
Yeah.
You know, how you feel when you feel hate?
So that's their perspective on hate. We'll hear a lot more about the perspective of Howard Thurman, who studied under Mohandas K. Gandhi in India and profoundly influenced Martin Luther King Jr., James Lawson, Pauli Murray, and other civil rights luminaries. I'd like to share several quotes from Howard Thurman that touch on hate and the thoughts his words bring to mind for me. Thurman wrote, "It cannot be denied that too often the weight of the Christian movement has been on the side of the strong and the powerful and against the weak and oppressed. This despite the gospel." So when I hear those words, I think of the Crusades, the Inquisition, the Ku Klux Klan, Tulsa, the Trail of Tears, and the Carlisle Indian School. Thurman also wrote, "If a man knows precisely what he can do to you or what epithet he can hurl against you in order to make you lose your temper, your equilibrium, then he can always keep you under subjection." So I think of slavery, lynchings, apartheid, segregation, the use of the N-word, the venom that has become a staple of political discourse in our nation. Thurman also wrote, "Jesus rejected hatred because he saw that hatred meant death to the mind, death to the spirit, death to the communion with his Father. He affirmed life, and hatred was the great denial." Reverend Aidson Wright Riggins III served as Director of Peace and Justice Ministries for the Southern Christian Leadership Conference of Greater Los Angeles. And while in LA, Aidson had the opportunity to meet with Howard Thurman and study his works, shortly before Thurman's death in 1981. We're honored once again to have Reverend Aidson Wright Riggins in our pulpit today.
Good morning, Thomas Paine, and good morning to all of you that are watching on Zoom or other social media. I'm so very, very grateful to you, Preston, and Linda, and to this church for this fellowship, for this opportunity to share with you as many times as you've had me come out. I'm particularly grateful for the way this service has been laid out today and sharing some of the words of Howard Thurman and the video by these children and talking about hate. It helps confirm to me the approach that I decided to take this morning by not so much focusing specifically on the words of Howard Thurman, but illustrating it through a story. And I really want to talk this morning about how we can overcome hate as one of the hounds of hell. And I'd like to read to you a portion of a Bible story, and then I'll return to that story later in my message. And this story comes out of 2 Kings, the 5th chapter, first 5 verses, and then skipping down to the 14th verse. And I'd like for you to just hear this. Naaman, commander of the army of the king of Syria, was a great man, with his master and in high favor, because by him the Lord had given victory to Syria. He was a mighty man of valor, but he was a leper. Now the Syrians, on one of their raids, had carried off a little maid from the land of Israel, and she waited on Naaman's wife. She said to her mistress, "Would that my Lord were with the prophet who is in Samaria. He would cure him of his leprosy." So Naaman went and told his lord thus and so, and spoke the maiden from the land of Israel. And the king of Syria said, "Go now, and I will send a letter to the king of Israel." And then in that 14th verse, we hear the conclusion of that story, saying, "So Naaman went down and dipped himself 7 times in the Jordan, according to the word of the man of God. And his flesh was restored like the flesh of a little child, and he was clean." I think that this little story is best appropriated if I spend some time talking about anger and hatred, and then coming back to the story. I don't know about you, but this last decade for me has been rather horrific and traumatizing. On more than one occasion, I found myself like Howard Beale, the fictional character in that movie Network back in 1976. When on primetime television, he shouted out to the masses, "I'm mad as hell, and I'm not gonna take it anymore." And then soon, millions of people were opening up their windows and shouting on their porches that same thing, "I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore." Sometimes I feel like that. For me, I believe that this heightened sense of anger was triggered for me 10 years ago when that 17-year-old boy, Trayvon Martin, was killed by George Zimmerman in a suburb of Orlando. Zimmerman was ultimately exonerated, claiming self-defense under Florida's controversial Stand Your Ground law. The Stand Your Ground law gives broad legal protection to anyone who says that they use deadly force because they feared death or bodily harm. Heck, would use a stronger word. I fear death and great bodily harm half the time I wander into a neighborhood overly decorated with American flags, support our police slogans, and Hey Brandon signs. I know what happened to 14-year-old Emmett Till on August 28, 1955, when he was abducted and tortured and lynched for allegedly whistling at a white woman. The very next month, I began kindergarten and was given my first talk. I was schooled fearing death, knowing that I was susceptible to great bodily harm simply because I was a black boy. I remember Sunday, September 25th, 1963, at 10:30 in the morning, Eastern Time, when Birmingham Church, 16th Street Church in Birmingham, was bombed and four little girls lost their lives and 22 others were killed. I get mad when America fails to live out its spirit of its creed that all persons are created equally and endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights. I get mad when 80% of my first cousin white Christian voters, white Christian evangelical voters, vote for a presidential candidate who calls Mexicans killers and rapists, who calls women pigs, who seems hell-bent on stripping away voting rights and marriage equality rights and women's reproductive freedom, while also denying science and promoting policies that are setting the planet aflame. Yes, I get mad. But as we all know, feelings of anger and rage and righteous indignation is not limited to people who feel unjustly treated in the social spheres of race, religion, and politics. Sometimes we feel anger for very personal reasons. If you've ever been physically or emotionally abused, if you've ever been fired without cause, if you've ever been dumped in a relationship, if you've ever been robbed of your reputation, you then may know what anger feels like. You don't have to be a black or a woman, or a gay, or a religious minority, or an unwelcomed immigrant to know what rage feels like. One of the reasons I stopped by this morning was to say that if you are angry with the right people, to the right degree, and at the right time, and for the right purpose, well, I ain't mad at you. I agree with Colin Powell, who says, get mad and get over it. Anger can be healthy. But what I'm most concerned about this morning is anger's first cousin. And that cousin's name is hatred. If we're not careful, and all too often I'm not careful, if we're not careful, anger can become hatred. Howard Thurman calls hatred one of the hounds of hell. And sometimes that hound haunts me. My grandmother taught me a song at an early age, which is also a prayer. And you may remember that song. That song goes something like this. Lord, I want to be like Jesus in my heart, in my heart. Lord, I want to be like Jesus in my heart. Lord, I want to be more loving in my heart, in my heart. I want to be more loving in my heart. But my problem is that while I claim to love Jesus, I find it hard to love those whom Jesus loves. In fact, sometimes I find myself allowing my anger with people who are loved by Jesus just as much as I am to slip into hatred for those people that Jesus loves. I'm angry with Mitch McConnell. I'm angry with Donald Trump. I am angry with my white Christian evangelical cousins. But to be honest with you, I am sometimes haunted by a hound of hell concerning them. I am angry with a relative. I am angry with former colleagues. I am angry with a former friend. Is there a way to be different and think different, to be different, that frees us so that even when we're angry We're not caught up in hatred. See, Joab says it this way: anger is like a flowing water. There's nothing wrong with it as long as we let it flow. But hate, my brothers and sisters, is like stagnant water. Hate is like water that when you gather it in one place and leave it to forget, and leave it there to forget. Hate is like standing water that becomes dirty and filthy and stinky and disease-ridden, poisonous and deadly. While we must allow ourselves to feel anger, we must not allow ourselves to slip into hatred. Anger is like little paper boats that can lead to revelation and clarity and forgiveness if we let that water flow. But hate is a cancerous cesspool that corrodes personality and eats away at our very integrity. Hate diminishes a person. It diminishes their sense of values and objectivity. This is the way Howard Thurman talked about hatred. He said that hatred tends to dry up springs of creative thought and the life of a hater, so that his or her resources become completely focused on the negative aspects of his or her environment. The urgent needs of personality for creative expression are starved to death. A man or a woman's horizons may become so completely dominated by the intense character of his or her hatred that there remains no creative residue in his or her mind and the spirit to give to great ideas, to great concepts. Such a person becomes lopsided. I don't want to be lopsided. I don't want you to be lopsided. I don't want us to be consumed by hatred. And I think that this little story that I read at the beginning helps us get a footing on how we address the world that threatens to hijack our spirits, condemning us to a life of despair and disdain. First thing I want to say about that little story is that it is helpful in helping us appropriate a different perspective on the story, a perspective that looks from the bottom up and not from the top down. Over the course of my ministry, I preach on this story 5 or 6 times. And each time I preach on this story, one way or another, I'm talking about Naaman and his leprosy and how he became clean. But that perspective is not the whole story. In fact, it may not be the most important part of the story. If we read the story from the bottom up, it can change our minds and perhaps our hearts as well. If you read the whole entirety of that 5th chapter, Naaman is mentioned by name, a pronoun, a description some 60 or 70 times in that 5th chapter. If he was alive in 2020 rather than hundreds of years before the Common Era, he would be dominating the news on MSNBC or CNN or Fox News. He would be popping up on Twitter feed and Facebook posts. The oppressor of the heroes, this general who occupied Israel, this sycophant of the emperor and the empire would be seeking to delude us that it was all about him as the main thing. I'm a news junkie, and sometimes my depression and despair is becoming so absorbed in the news that drives me to think that white supremacy is the main thing, or drives me to think that chauvinism or heterosexism is the main thing, that drives me to thinking that the lives of the little folks don't matter. Sometimes I cannot sleep at night or focus during the day because of that person that has hurt or humiliated me and still exists in the world and gives no thought of me. And I get angry. But sometimes I move towards hatred. I'm reminded that these big isms and these big shots and these huge issues and these personalities may not be the main thing in the economy of God at all. Perhaps God is doing something different. It has only been recently I've come to see the whole of Naaman's attention-grabbing story actually revolves around the nameless, captive girl who understood that regardless of her circumstances, she belonged to Israel and she belonged to God.
brothers and sisters, I just wanted to point out that Naaman got 25 minutes and 30 seconds in the Jerusalem Tonight primetime news segment. And this nameless heroine slave girl only got 19 words of coverage. Only 19 words. Remember the words she said? Would that my Lord were with the prophet who is in Samaria. He would cure him of his leprosy. Perhaps we would not hate our enemies, our exes, our formers, as much as we sometimes do, if we really understood that at the end of the story, it's not about them. It's really about us. Thomas Paine, it is harder to hate when you know who you are and you know that love has the last word. And if we cooperate and collaborate and co-create with love, we will come to see that it is indeed our incorrigible faith that lights the flame of every other person in our life's journey. Let me see if I can push this just a little further. It becomes harder to hate when we realize that the smallest and the youngest person in this narrative is in fact the heroine. I must confess that I, like this unnamed little girl, like this little girl because she is the smallest and the youngest person in the story. For much of my life, personally and socially, I've been among the youngest and the smallest. And from a personal perspective, I like her. This unnamed person is younger and smaller than Naaman. She is younger and smaller than her mistress. She's younger and smaller than her emperor and anybody else. The Revised Standard Version calls her this little maid. Some of us feel height challenged, or melanin challenged, or gender challenged, or wealth challenged, or health challenged. And if we feel that way, we know something about how this little girl may have felt. Jesus calls these little ones on the wing, the little ones. The little ones are often used in very special ways to enact God's intention for humanity. When I read history, I see little black ones making a difference in Selma. I see little female ones making a difference in Seneca Falls. I see little gay ones making a difference in Stonewall. I see little indigenous ones making a difference at Standing Rock. If we understand that even in our littleness, we can make a difference, it can help us overcome our disdain and our hatred for the big ones. To paraphrase Langston Hughes, I can see this little maiden singing the words about her role in Syria as the servant of Naaman's wife. I am the little maiden. They send me to the kitchen when company comes. But I laugh and I eat well and I grow strong, and tomorrow I'll sit at the table when company comes, and nobody will dare say to me, eat in the kitchen then, because they'll see how beautiful I am and be ashamed. Brothers and sisters, we must not allow our littleness to limit the expansiveness of God's transformative power of love. Because small efforts can build big things. One word doesn't make a book, but one word does make a novel. And from beginning of small things, everything else flows. The capacity to affirm one's I-ness, regardless of how little they may be, appears is the beginning of our agency. And agency is a prerequisite to relationship. I must precede thou. When I truly grasp the sacredness of the power of my I-ness, I make room for the thou-ness of my enemy, my oppressor, my formers, my exes. I make room for thou because I know who I am. Listen again to these words. Now the Syrians, on one of their raids, had carried off a little maid from the land of Israel, and she waited on Naaman's wife. She said to her mistress, "Would that my Lord were with the prophet who was in Samaria. He would cure him of his leprosy." Do you see it? Do you see that if anyone has a right to be filled with rage, it is the heroine of this text. Look at how she is described. She is the little maid. She is the nameless captive. She is a slave. She is separated from her people in Israel. She is filled with memories of having become part of the spoils of war. She has been ripped from the arms of her parents. She has seen them die, perhaps, at the hand of the Syrians. This little maid, who is the victim of violence, demonstrates not hate, but generosity towards her oppressor. She demonstrates not hate, but hope for healing even of her enslaver. Why? May I suggest to you that the little maid refused to hate because she was raised right and held on to her core beliefs. She knew who she was. Let me tell you this story. I was in the sixth grade, and I was coming home from school. Path I'd always traveled all of my life, down this alleyway. And on this particular day, I noticed as I'm coming down the alleyway, a fire alarm, a little red fire alarm attached to the building. And I don't know what happened. It's kind of like Flip Wilson said, the devil made me do it. I knew that all I needed to do was pull that fire alarm and run the two blocks home, and all would be well, and I'd see the fire truck coming down the way. I pulled the alarm, and I began to run, and I took two steps, and a Charlie horse caught me right in the bottom of my thigh. I fell on the ground. I tried to get back up. I began to crawl, and in the distance, I could hear the fire truck making its way. I got about 10 feet crawling. The fire truck came up. The guy looked at the building, and then he looked at me. And he said, "I'm ashamed of you." He said, "I know who you are. You're Mrs. Riggins' boy." Mrs. Riggins was my high school teacher. And you look just like her. I know who you are. This little maiden girl, she was able to look her oppressor in the face and say, "I pray healing for you." Not so much because he was a lord over her, but rather because she knew who she was. And in spite of everything that had happened to her, being ripped from the core of Israel, taken from her parents, made a slave, there in Naaman's house, she knew who she was. Hebrew Bible has a text that says, "Train up a child in the way she should go. And when she is old, when she's stolen from her native land, when she's ripped apart from her parents, when she's been called ugly, when she is no longer connected, she will remember and return." Train up a child in the way she should go. How do we overcome hatred? We remember who we are. And we remain connected to that group of people who know who they are, who nurture us, who nourish us, who give us the capacity to keep on keeping on. Yeah, even when you're the unwelcome immigrant, even when you've had reproductive freedom snatched, even when you face abuse, physical and emotional, we can overcome hate if we know who we are. My brothers and sisters, let's remember who we are. Remember that we have been healed by God. Remember that we are held by God. Remember that it's not their story, but it is the story of what God would do through us. Yeah, King was right. Hatred cannot overcome hatred.
Darkness cannot overcome darkness. Only light and only love can do that. My prayer for each of us today is that we might be like this little maid who was able to wish well even for those who oppressed him, and through her own agency, find hope and well-being for herself and for the world. Amen.
Thank you. Thank you, Reverend Ace, for those inspiring words that call us to an incorrigible faith. I love that phrase, in which we can use our littleness to make the world over again in the face of hate. Thank you. Now we've come to the portion of our service that we call Matters of the Heart, where we hear from those of you who may wish to share something that is weighing on your heart or lifting it up today. And as you gather your thoughts, please listen to the musical meditation by Isaac Strader, after which John Sayre will instruct all of us in how to participate in Matters of the Heart.
This time of sharing to a close by singing hymn number 123, Spirit of Life. This is a version performed by the First Parish Brewster, Massachusetts Unitarian Universalist Congregation. And the words will be up on the screen here in just a minute.
Sweet.
And now, with faith that there is a spirit in the universe working against the things that destroy, the thing that destroys and lays waste, those are words of Howard Thurman, and with a determination to drive out hate with love, we extinguish this chalice, but not the light of hope that we will carry with us into the world. Now we will conclude with the closing song, Standing on the Side of Love, written by Jason Shelton and performed by Elena Hemingway. The words will appear in the video if you care to sing along.
Keep love tightly bound.